Sports Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Moore. James Herbert, you too want to have your own team, just like Kyrie Irving.
I demand a trade. Send me to some rebuilding operation where I can be the man.
So I went on vacation and Kyrie decided that he wanted out. And then someone leaked it. And now reports say that Kyrie's mad at LeBron for leaking it. Unless he didn't and Kyrie leaked it, which is possible. Either way, the Cavs are in complete meltdown. This is stunning for a team that went to the finals 3 years in a row. I mean, it's just amazing. Do you know how hard it is to screw up when you have LeBron James? I mean, this is an impressive performance by the Cavs. To make this much a mess of a team that has LeBron James, that's impressive. That really is impressive.
To a team that, like, stormed through the East, that looked legitimately competitive for several games in the finals, that won a championship 2 seasons ago, for it to, like, unravel this fast is crazy. Like, there was a point, you know, like, 2 games into the finals, I think, like, a lot of us thought, all right, this team is just not going to be able to challenge the Warriors at all. They're going to need to make major changes. And then the way the series ended, it was like, okay, like, if they can get a Paul George or Jimmy Butler, like, they should try to do that. But it seems like the most likely outcome here is they're just going to run it back. Like, they at least competed. And maybe they can make some changes around the fringes, whatever. And then look at what happened since then. Like, it's been – it looks right now like the worst summer imaginable just because of the discord, the dysfunction. LeBron's not happy. The David Griffin thing, like, I mean, say what you will about Kobe Altman and the potential that he has as the general manager, whatever. Like, the timing and the way that this was handled with Griffin was – just awful. It ruined everything. And I don't know if their Irving relationship could have been salvaged if Griffin was still around. Like, I honestly don't know. But for this to be happening at this stage of the summer is crazy. And the ironic thing is, like, I don't necessarily think that moving Kyrie Irving is, like, an insane idea or something where the Cavs necessarily have to take a step back. It's just the way that this has all happened. And the people are already talking as if LeBron is definitely gone. It's stunning.
Yeah, it really is amazing. He won't waive his no-trade clause for anything, reportedly. We'll see how that goes if Kyrie gets traded and the team's in a downward spiral and it gets to be, you know, February. We'll see where he's at on that. But, like, you know, with Kyrie, it was shocking on the forefront. And then I'm doing this piece kind of looking back at the history of their relationship, at least through published reports. I remember being in a locker room with them back in, like, 2014. They were in Denver. And they were going through that slump to start the year. And they won. And it was fine because the Nuggets were terrible. And then after the game, like, Kyrie, like, went over to LeBron and was, like, really excited to show him this, like, viral video of someone doing something stupid. And was, like, super excited to show him. And LeBron looked at him like, It was just very much one of those, like, you're very young. Like, you're just a very young person. Kyrie is the same guy that bailed on Fan Appreciation Night when he was in his second season. He's not the same person because he's older now and he's different. What I find notable is not that he did that. I find it notable that after he was asked about that, later he talked about going into the summer of 2014... Before LeBron showed up, this is in, like, late June, he talked about how he's, like, I kind of realized, like, I had to grow up a little bit. And part of that means, like, I've got to understand that the responsibility that being the leader of this franchise means, and if that means all these expectations, I've got to do things my way. And that, like, that struck out to me in retrospect. He's reportedly upset with how much LeBron dominates the ball, which... He's LeBron James. I kind of think he should have the ball. Like, I don't know.
Like, if Kyrie has it almost as much as him, and LeBron is 20 times the player that he is.
Yeah. And this is – so a lot of this – it gets really complicated to talk about Kyrie's, like, trade value and where he fits and what he should want. Because honestly, like, I never thought that he was the best fit for them. I've been banging on this tree for a lot of years that they should have done a Kyrie Irving for Chris Paul trade when he was with the Clippers. That would have made a lot of sense. The Clippers would have gotten a young scoring guard who fits with their timeline. Like, Kyrie, Blake, and DJ are within, like, 2-3 years of each other. Chris Paul!
Well, this is the thing about the timing. If Kyrie had said this right at the end of the season,
yep,
then maybe that could have happened. But part of the reason why he didn't say it was that he didn't know who was going to be running the team.
Yep. So, like, it always made more sense to have, and you talk about, like, Chris Paul's a ball-dominant point guard, but that's kind of thing is, like, LeBron James deserves to have the ball as much as possible, but Chris Paul would have given him somebody that could have, he would trust to take the ball and could create and run the offense, and then that gives LeBron an ability to not have to do so much, which extends his career and gives him an opportunity to be the best that he possibly can be. Like, that to me was always the optimum, was, like, you put a guy like Chris Paul or John Wall next to LeBron and have them orchestrate things. That's a really solid set of moves, I think, for what they kind of want to do with the personnel that they had. But it was, the conversation was never about Kyrie. It was always about Love. You know, and it was just kind of assumed, like, well, Kyrie's the second best player. And then like, Kyrie drops 52 on the Spurs, and it's like, you can't get rid of him. And then it was, he hit the game-winning shot for the first title. Like, he won the go-ahead shot to win the title for that team. That yep. was him. And he was huge in their comeback last year, down 3-1. He was massive in games 5, 6, and 7. He just went nuts. He's one of the best scoring guards in the league. But it says something when me, who's always like, you know, like, Steph Curry's a little overrated as a passer. Like, he's fine, but he's not great. And even I'm like, oh, Steph's way more of a playmaker than Kyrie. Like, way better. And it's the same kind of deal with the defense, where I'm always like, well, no, like, Steph's like a liability in a lot of situations on defense. But Steph's like 10 times the defender that Kyrie is, because Steph gives consistent effort. That's how Steph's led the league in steals before, is he gives consistent effort defensively. Kyrie does not. And yet all of this, Kyrie's still a guy that probably has the best handles in the league and can go off for 52 at any point. And that's always going to be really valuable. And he's like, what, 26?
25.
You got 7 great years of Kyrie Irving left. Who doesn't want that? Well, other than the other bazillion teams that have great point guards.
There's so many ways I can respond to what you just said. I remember when I was writing my, like, Cavs postmortem, and I think I ended up shortening the section where I argue that they should consider trading Kyrie, but I did have that in there. And that's not because I don't understand how great he is as a ball handler, as a shooter, as a finisher. Like, the way that he avoids getting his shot blocked on the inside when he's just, like, a normal-sized dude. Like, that's the other thing. Like, you stand next to Kyrie in a locker room, and you're like, this is just a normal guy. And he is just a magician with the ball in his hand. Like, I understand how great he is at creating offense specifically for himself and doing it in a pretty efficient manner, considering how high his usage rate usually is. And it was at its highest last year, I believe. Or at least as highest since he's been playing with LeBron. My thing is just, what do the Cavs need from a LeBron James co-star? And yes, they need some playmaking ability because LeBron doesn't want to do it himself. He was the one that was asking for more playmakers during this season. But I think you really want good defense, and I think ideally you would want a better passer than what Kyrie Irving is. Now, they should be asking for a lot. They will ask for a lot, but I don't feel about this the same way I feel about a lot of these, like, similar situations, like when we were talking about Jimmy Butler and Paul George or whoever. Like, I don't think the Cavs have to take a step back by trading Kyrie Irving. I think if they find the right move, particularly if they get a couple of different pieces, they could actually end up being a better, more balanced team. Like, they really need more help on the wing. And if you can trade Kyrie for a similar point guard, like if they get Eric Bledsoe, which has been talked about a lot, who's a much better defender and not as good a shooter, not as good a finisher, whatever. If they get Eric Bledsoe and then they get one or two guys that are like big, long, athletic, like switchy wing guys that can play like 2, 3, or 4, I think they could end up being a better team. So as much as we're laughing at the Cavs and saying how ridiculous this is and how bad the summer has been, I don't think this has to destroy them. I don't think it means that they're going to take a step back, you know?
That's what's fascinating about it is, like, what if they trade Kyrie and they're better? And, like,
I mean, it's very possible.
There is a large section of Cavs fans that will be outraged by that statement because they have been riding with Kyrie since he was drafted. This is complicated for some of the Cavs fans that I've read on Twitter and in some of the blogs. This is really conflicted for them because the thing was, when LeBron left, they sunk everything into Kyrie. It was like, Kyrie's going to be the guy. And he frustrated them in the beginning, but then, like, he became the guy that hit the game-winning shot. And it was like, all right, we have a complicated relationship with LeBron. Like, we love him. We appreciate him for coming back and leading the team to the title, but he did leave. Kyrie's, like, been with us. And, like, we've defended Kyrie versus all the comparisons with John Wall and so and whoever. And now, like, Kyrie's, like, I'm out. And so it's, like, really hard for them to be able to figure out a way to accept the fact that they might be better, but I think it's very much true. Like, it's just possible that, you know, a Bledsoe, add another rim protector, do whatever component, like, gives them that kind of options. Let's talk a little bit about kind of some of the trade kind of scenarios here. We'll, of course, say there's a chance that this blows over, like everyone, you mentioned this, everyone wants to compare it to Kobe because of the relationship between Kobe and Kyrie. It's possible that he gets through this and then, like, never gets traded and he just stays with the team and...
Yeah.
Who knows? Like, it's the Cavs. They're always dramatic. Maybe this is just something that figures out. Zach Lowe did report this morning that they are basically acting like they are gonna be, like, he's gonna be gone. That's the assumption that they're working on. At the same time, if that's the case, we should look at, like, where he could possibly go. And the four teams are San Antonio, New York, Miami. What's the other one?
Minnesota.
Minnesota. So he's buds with Jimmy Butler. Butler kind of intimated that there might be a deal at some point to add another guy. Like, he had made some kind of noise about that. Reportedly.
At his press conference, yeah.
Reportedly, there were talks to send Kyrie Irving to the Bulls on draft night. Before they dealt Butler, like, all of these things are kind of in play. Like, he's really close with Butler, with Butler. He would fit really well there in a sense. I don't know who's passing on that team with Jimmy Butler, Kyrie Irving, Karl Anthony Towns, and Andrew Wiggins. Like, I legit do not know anyone that is going to pass at all in that situation. So I think that there's a lot of ways that could go sideways. It is interesting, though, right? Like, you just have, like, a lot of weapons. It's just, like, athleticism, and if Thibodeau could get him to defend, and, like, Kyrie running off of, like, dribble handoffs with Cat, that's terrifying, you know? Mm-hmm. Except for the part where he never passes to Cat, even though he's wide open. Like, that would be, you know, ideal, I think. It'd be really good in that situation. It's funny that it's like, yeah, like, he really wants to go to the Spurs. Spurs have said nothing. Like, Spurs have said absolutely nothing.
They never do.
They're not going to trade Tony Parker there. The Cavs wouldn't take that because they know that he's going to be out for most of the year. Like, there's just, like, a whole lot of scenarios where that doesn't work at all. Like, I can't see any combination of players where the Spurs would be willing to give up whatever, anything. I don't know what they have. Like, the Cavs aren't going to be like, yeah, send us LaMarcus Aldridge. That'll fix our problems with the Warriors. Like, that's not going to happen, right?
And unless they trade Kevin Love somewhere else and they replace Love with Aldridge.
You could do a three-team deal.
Then it gets tricky. Like, all these situations are complicated. Like, take the Wolves. Like, Jeff Teague can't be traded until December the 15th. So, are you waiting until then to do the deal? Or are you not including Jeff Teague in the deal and you're going to have both of them at least for a little while? Do the Cavs want to try to get Andrew Wiggins back? Like, is that relationship too messed up to even happen again? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. And then New York's the funny one, because if you can get a third team involved, then you can do the prototypical Melo and Kyrie. Not like Melo to the Cavs, Kyrie to New York. Various pieces get flipped around wherever. That's a massive downgrade, I think, for the Cavs in a lot of ways. But maybe if they get, like, a bunch of other things back, but then you have to find another team that's interested, and I don't know that that's going to happen. Like, would the Knicks do Like, would the Knicks trade Kristaps, you know, in that situation? Like,
no.
Scott Perry seems like he's off the board on Kristaps. Seems like the Kristaps thing was things got bad, Phil got fired, that was the end of that conversation. Like, it seems like when Phil Jackson got let go, that was the end of the conversation about trading Kristaps Porzingis.
I'm actually really intrigued with the Irving Kristaps combination, because in some ways that's like a perfect pairing. Like, they can run pick and pops and pick and rolls. I think
Kristaps is used to not being passed to. That's
yes, but also like Kristaps, as much as we talk about him as a franchise player, and I think he has that kind of talent, he's not a guy that's going to dribble the hell out of the ball and create a ton of offense for himself. Like, you still need a playmaker either on the wing or at the point guard position around him. And I think in that way, they could work well together. The thing is, I don't think either of us is saying, oh, he's going to make Kristaps that much better. But that's the thing about Kyrie Irving. Like, we don't talk about him doing that with anyone. He's not that kind of point guard. He's not the kind of guy that everybody's like, oh, like, I would just love to play with Kyrie Irving. That would be so much fun.
Bill Simmons reported, with a rare scoop for him, on Monday morning that the Thunder are in talks, which is odd. Melo,
not for Kyrie.
On the surface, yeah, for Melo. Sorry, we'll get there in a second. I got confused. We'll get there in a minute. So New York, Miami. I mean, sure. I guess you can do like Dragic and
I would want Winslow. I would want Bam Adebayo.
Yeah,
those. And I would want a pick. I'd want a pick too.
You get young dudes. It's fine. That's like,
that's one of those things where I don't think that makes the Cavs worse. Like, Goran Dragic can do a lot for your team. He's a really good player.
Yeah.
And if you get help in other areas that you need at the same time, then you'll be fine.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really know how to judge Dragic versus Irving, because I don't feel like Dragic can take over the game the way Kyrie can, but he's definitely a much better offense setter. He's just as efficient of a player, and he's obviously a much better playmaker, and defensively they're about the same. Like, they're just kind of equal. So
I'd rather have Dragic defensively than Kyrie, but
based off of what?
I think he plays a lot harder on defense than Kyrie does.
I agree, but he's also, I think, more physically limited.
Yeah.
That makes sense. That's fair. I mean, that's the thing.
Yeah, I mean, there are times where you see Kyrie really engaged on defense and you're like, damn.
But it's never. But he doesn't do it. I mean, that's the thing. Do you want a guy that can defend and doesn't, or do you want a guy that just can't do it at all and tries really hard?
I mean, this is my thing. This is why I think I'd rather have Dragic than Kyrie on defense. And on offense, Irving is the more talented player, the more skilled player. But I don't think you lose that much if you go from Irving to Dragic. And then if you supplement that with picks and young players, which are the things that the Cavs need, like, especially if they get a guy like Winslow, and I know he can't shoot, and that's a huge problem next to LeBron, but I still think that guy has a ton of potential. So I would be very interested in that if the Heat were to offer a package like that. But I don't know I don't know that that's what the Cavs are looking for. Like, I find it hard to get a handle on how much they're demanding. It sounds like they're going to ask for a hell of a lot.
Denver was mentioned by Zach Lowe in his article that kind of broke it down as a possible destination. I don't have this confirmed. I think they kicked the tires, but I don't think that... Part of it is, like Lowe mentioned, that the Cavs are going to want Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, and a first-round pick, and that is flat-out zero, never going to happen. They don't want to trade Murray point blank. They don't know what he's going to be. Like, is Jamal Murray going to be better than Kyrie Irving? Probably not. Is he going to be a more balanced player than Kyrie Irving? There's a very good chance of that. And without knowing what Jamal Murray is going to be, you don't want to sell on him too soon. You just don't. He could, like, the very likely possibility is that Jamal Murray overall will be not nearly as good as Kyrie Irving. You just can't sell on him that early. Two, they are just not moving picks. Like, it's just not, like, they have not moved their own pick in a deal yet. Like, unless they're moving back for another pick. That's the only way that they are moving, that they move these picks. They'll trade other picks that they've acquired, like the one that they sent for, they sent in the Nurkic trade, but they don't deal their own picks. They just never leave themselves without that option. So I don't think, like, if it was, you know, if it was Gary Harris and a pick, maybe, but they are really high on Gary Harris. And Harris has done a lot to kind of ingratiate himself with the franchise too, where, like, he's just he has done everything that you want to see from a guy. Like, he's put in the work. He's improved every year. He's a good two-way player. He was involved in trade rumors and then turned around and helped them pitch Paul Millsap. Like, that's his professionalism. He hasn't done anything to engender any sort of issues.
I have a hot take here.
Yeah.
I wouldn't touch it. Like, if I was Denver, I'd just completely stay away. And you know what I said about Irving and Porzingis actually making sense as a duo? I don't think Irving and Jokic make sense at all.
Right.
I just don't get it. The whole point of Jokic is he's a playmaker.
Right.
And your offense should revolve around him and him moving the ball.
Yep.
What purpose does Kyrie Irving serve there unless he wants to go and play a complementary role? If you want to play a complementary role, stay in Cleveland.
It's tough because you need a team that basically wants to start from the ground up and is just going to be like, the franchise is yours. Like, we love
the Knicks
so much. Like, the franchise is yours. And so, yeah, it's basically the Knicks. Like, that's basically what it comes down to. Because there's just not another team. The Boston talk is nonsensical. Like, what, Danny Ainge has not been willing to give up pieces for things that he actually needed. So now he's going to give up assets for a guy he doesn't need. And
no. The
Kyrie versus Isaiah Thomas thing is like, it says a lot about who you are as like an NBA fan and analyst. Like, it's, to me, they're about equal, but look, Isaiah's a more willing passer. That's just flat out true. I think that Kyrie's capability is a little bit better because of his size in a lot of aspects. And this isn't a surprise for anyone who's listened, but Isaiah's more valuable right now. It just is. You're not going to get Isaiah and anything else. That's never, like, one, that's not going to happen with a normal, oh yeah, okay, we can do a reasonable deal franchise, let alone the Celtics. Like, the Celtics are going to be like, we'll give you, okay, you give us Kyrie, and in exchange, we'll give you Marcus Smart and Yabu. And the Nets pick? Well, no, of course we're not going to give you the Nets pick. Oh, so the Lakers pick. No, of course we're not going to give you the Lakers pick. The Grizzlies pick. Nope. No picks. None.
What about Zizic?
You get, no, can't give up on Zizic. You know, he scored like a bucket in Summer League. Can't do that. Too much potential, James. So like, that's just like never going to happen. And then like, you go down the line. Like, seriously, like, I mean, Atlanta is the only team I kind of thought of, like, as an outside candidate that would make a little bit of sense.
Does Milwaukee make any sense to you?
It does, from the perspective of, if they can do a deal like that, they're never going to be able to get a player like Kyrie Irving otherwise.
Yeah.
So, like, they kind of have to take those advantages when they come available. But
they'd have to gut their team. Like, you'd have to lose Middleton. And you might have to lose Parker.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you might have to lose cheap Malcolm Brogdon.
Thon.
Ooh, I don't, oh man.
Yeah.
I don't know if they'd do that.
Yeah, and that's the thing is like, if I was Milwaukee, I would say no thanks. Because I'm like, Giannis is a better playmaker and is an omega player. I need guys that absolutely compliment him. I'm not going to trade for a headache. This is one of the things. I don't want to trade for a guy. I'll say this. I don't want to trade for a guy that says, no, I don't want to defer to LeBron James. Because you
okay,
are
I've
never...
been waiting to have this conversation. Yeah. Yes. Do you judge him, like, when you see that he wants to be traded from Cleveland?
I don't, because I know where he's at in his life. Like, I get it. Like, the word on Kyrie, I heard somebody in Cleveland told me this a couple years ago. They said, it's close to the team. They said, Kyrie, it's not that Kyrie's like a mega partier like some dudes are. It's not that he's like obsessed with being a star. It's just that he likes the NBA lifestyle. Like, he just is very much in tune with, like, he is an NBA player, an NBA star. He likes that lifestyle. And at 25, I think that's how you feel. the thing that's going to happen is when Kyrie Irving is 32, if he gets dealt, there's going to be an interview where he says, I shouldn't have left Cleveland. Like, I should have stayed with LeBron for as long as possible. I didn't realize how hard it is to win in this. And Kyrie, I think, is a smart guy, despite believing that the earth is flat. Like, I think that, I think he's fair. Like, his part of it is, like, look, if you get into Duke, I don't care what the circumstances are, you cross a bar of basic intelligence that's pretty high. So, I think Kyrie's a smart dude. I just think that he's prioritizing the wrong things right now. He's got his title, right? He's validated. Like, he's certified. No matter what happens, he's off of that chain. He is not going to go down as Charles Barkley or Gary Payton or any of those dudes. He's got his title. He made the game-winning shot to win an NBA title. That's, like, he is certified in that aspect. But at this point in his life, you know, he doesn't, like, and part of it is, like, he's just like, I can be great if I... Here's what's funny. He and Melo are very similar. Because Melo could have always been a better player. But Melo's thing was, I know what kind of player I am, and he believes so much in his ability to do those things and be the player that he wants to be and win that way that he was never willing to listen to anything else. Like, he wasn't willing to be like, wow, guys that have played under Mike D'Antoni's system are extremely successful. Well, I should adapt to this. He was like, no, I'm Carmelo Anthony. The team adapts to me. Kyrie Irving's the same way, where it's like, no, like, I'm such a great scorer. You can win with me because I get buckets, which I think is startling that he's played in the finals and not realized how tough, like, how important defense and versatility is. I guess maybe the East has kind of brought up in his mind that he can win anywhere, but I don't believe that to be true.
I hold two thoughts on this, and they're a little bit contradictory. And the one is that I think in this league, it's more important that you have stars who can play well with others than it's ever been before. So just because you have a guy that can carry a team, that guy might actually not be as valuable as a guy that can fit in with other guys that are equally or more talented than they are, because we're in a point where you need 2, 3, 4 all-stars to get a seat at the table with the elite teams. And then on the other hand, I think of Kyrie Irving's game, and I think you can make the argument that in a weird way, he's better suited to be the number one guy than a number two or three guy. In a way, it's sort of like James Harden now. If you're a guy that the best skills you have are finishing, shooting, ball handling, and creating your own offense. Harden's obviously a better passer, but stay with me here. If that's your game and you're not that good at defense, then your best situation is to go somewhere where you can have like a sky high usage rate, be responsible for most of the offense, and have a team that's built around you, that have guys that are going to make you better, not have a team that's built around LeBron. And I think part of this is he's looked at this team and every single decision they've made over the last few years has been about LeBron, not about him. And when he signed his extension before LeBron came back, he thought it was going to be built around him. He was still perfectly okay with LeBron arriving and taking him to the championship every year. But I think he's probably at the point where he looks at a guy like John Wall and Harden and whoever else, and he thinks, I can be that number one guy. Just put me in a situation where they see me that way. And I think he didn't feel like the Cavs saw him that way, and he didn't think it was ever going to change. And I can understand his thinking from that perspective. So I don't love it, because I think that by far the most important thing these days is like being able to blend in and complement other stars. But I kind of get what he's envisioning for himself, I think.
Yeah, I get why Kyrie wants this. It's just, I will say this, is that if I'm another team, if that's where your guy's head is at, I don't want him. I don't want that guy. I don't know how many times that you've been able to win with that guy. Like, Kobe Bryant with the 2009 and 2010 Lakers in a year where, like, in 2 years where the Magic kind of came out of nowhere and disrupted LeBron, and then the Celtics had a just bizarre season. Like, I don't know, other than that, when you've had a guy and be successful that way when he's that self-centric. And this is not to say that I don't think that LeBron is, because the question today is, a lot of this is like, what's LeBron's role in this? And Tom Zeller had a good thing on SB Nation about it. Like, I think a lot of it is like, LeBron can't be anything but kind of the all-encompassing gravitational pull that he is.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's LeBron James. And like, there's just too much on your plate. There's too much that you always have to manage, that you always have to do. And like, you also don't have time. Like, everything has to be really like super focused in and locked in, and everything has to be like in this regard, because I just don't think that you know, that creates a situation where LeBron's also like, he's not a normal human being, right? Like, in a lot of ways, but also just, he's never lived like a normal life. Like, he hasn't been normal since he was like 13. So like, that's part of it too. I think the issue is just that, Kyrie was never really in awe of him. This is a quote from Media Day back in 2014 when LeBron first joined the team. You just try to put it in perspective. He says, regarding James's comment that this was going to be Kyrie's team, which, by the way, was never going to be true. I'm the point guard of this team, Irving said Sunday at Cleveland Clinic Courts, responding to a question about James's statements. I've got to get us into our offense and lead our defense just to continue to be myself. He's done none of that. He hasn't gotten them into their offense. He hasn't led their defense, but he has continued to be himself. And he says, I don't think James could have said it any better, honestly. You guys were always going to make what you wanted out of that, but for us, it's just about making plays. All of us have the ability to make plays out there, and I think our offense will be designed around that. Like, what he's saying is, as long as I do what I do, we're going to be fine. We can succeed if I do what I do. I don't know that that's true if you don't have LeBron James, man. Like, I just... Here's the thing, is like, John Wall is a walk it up, slow it down, dribble the air of the ball, high usage player. But he also knows how to get guys involved, and his decision making is always great. Kyrie does not have the kind of instincts to get other guys involved. And when you're on a team and they're just like, let's just throw four guys at him, you might get 50. You're not going to win. Especially not in today's league. Like, the league's also shifted a lot. You know, like, this isn't, like, in the mid-2000s, Kyrie's a lot more valuable than he is now.
Well, yeah, and that's part of it, is the style of play has actually been, to me, it should have been to Kyrie's liking there. Like, I don't know, dude, this is a weird reference to make, but did you watch that Kobe video about the Cavs, the, like, golden monarchy, not the golden, the golden democracy was the Warriors one, the two-crowned monarchy or whatever?
No, I think it was on the road.
Okay. All right, so he did a video about the Warriors and showed how their system creates baskets, and how even guys as skilled as Durant and Curry are like moving off the ball and catching the ball in a position to do something. And he did a video on the Cavs and talked about how their offense, this is not exactly revelatory for people who watch the Cavs, but basically flows out of Kyrie and LeBron and what they do. So basically, nobody else in Cleveland is empowered to dribble much or create anything, which results in LeBron and Kyrie having these like really high usage rates and being able to get their numbers. And also, by the way, being able to create open shots for themselves and other people when the ball hops around after they draw double teams. Like, that's been why they had such a great offense, especially in the playoffs. So it's not like it's a bad approach, but I do think the way the league is going, it is going much more to the way the Warriors play. And the Cavs, based on their personnel, they had to do it that way. They didn't have other playmakers. Like, the Warriors had the luxury of having like Iguodala and Livingston and like Draymond Green and all these guys. Like, the Cavs basically allowed Irving to play like a 1A guy. And Lowe had a great stat in the piece that you referenced earlier about how many shots Kyrie got up when LeBron was off the floor, to the point where it was like more than Kobe even shot per possession or per minute at any point in his career. So even though it feels like Kyrie has taken a backseat to LeBron, like, he is playing like most guys who are the number one option on other teams. And when you compare them to a team like the Warriors, he's playing more like a number one option than anyone on that team. And that's because of the way the Cavs have designed their offense and because of the way they built their team. So part of this is, like, he winds up somewhere else, he's going to basically be doing the same thing and winning a lot less probably, unless it's the Spurs. And like, will he be happier then? Will he like realize what he gave up? Like, I don't know. Like, I think the only real argument for this is that he just really wants a team built around him, or he sees Cleveland crumbling and just wants to get out of there before it completely falls apart. And I thought from the second I saw this news, like, this can't just be about the role. Like, this has to be about not being stuck in Cleveland with a roster built around LeBron without LeBron anymore.
Okay, but stop right there. If he wants to be the guy, when LeBron leaves, he gets it. This is the thing that gives me pause on that line of thinking, because I hear what you're saying, and like, Kyrie's just being savvy and getting out before the ship sinks. I don't know if I buy it, because I think...
I don't know if that's even savvy.
Like, I think...
But I think that's a strategy.
I think to a degree, it's like, if he wants to be the guy, he gets to be the guy. When LeBron leaves, he's still going to have Love. He'll still have Love. And that will, and they'll still be like the team that won the title with Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love. And that'll be enough for them to be good, and then he could be the number one guy. Why wouldn't you want that?
Well, Love will be in a contract year. I think he probably distrusts ownership and management right now based on what's happened this summer. And he's probably looking to like get in as good a situation as he can possibly be. Like, I can't see this only being about being the guy. And I understand there's some sort of like, it can't be both here, right?
I think it's, but I think it really is. I think even if LeBron said, I'm never leaving, I think he would still want out based off of what we kind of read.
Yeah. I think that's very possible.
There's been like a lot of reporting on it, and all the reporting is like, dude thinks that he's good enough to win on his own.
Yeah. I think he does. But I also think that he doesn't want to win on his own in Cleveland.
Yeah.
Like, now, he's also been there since he was drafted.
Now,
a lot of guys.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense of he wants to go play in a bigger market and have the lifestyle, yada, yada, yada. And he knows that guys don't get traded in their final year of their contracts because nobody will deal for them. That makes sense to me. But I just, I'm not willing to go out there and say like, ah ha ha, he's so smart, gonna go to a winner so that he doesn't get stuck. That I'm not willing to go to. I think that this is I don't think winning is a part of this equation for him.
I think it's part of it, but it's obviously not all of it if he's willing to go to the Knicks, right?
Yes.
that's the thing. I think he's done with the situation. And I think there's a lot of reasons for it. But, I mean, part of this is just how annoyed is everyone with management right now? Just how bad is the vibe around there?
Yeah.
Because it feels like it's awful and people are just trying to get out.
So, I will present you with a tough decision. Okay.
Yes.
If the Cavs call the Sixers and say...
No.
Say Fultz.
Say no.
Hang on. Say Fultz, Bayless, we'll take Okafor, throw in Robert Covington. Do you think, what are the odds that Markelle Fultz winds up being better than Kyrie Irving?
The odds are pretty good.
You think so?
I really like Markelle Fultz.
And that answers it. And that's a perfectly reasonable answer.
And also, Robert Covington is awesome and a perfect fit in Cleveland and a perfect fit in today's NBA. And throw him.
I want to go there real quick. Just as a side.
Let's do it.
Because like, we are the kind of people that argue about things like, oh, hey, in the middle of a Kyrie Irving conversation, we're going to talk about Robert Covington.
Hey, man. All right. Go ahead.
So last year, like, the defense really fell off. And that was like noticeable with like a lot of fans. Like even like the bloggers, the hardcore Defend the Process guys. Like, man, he's just like not the same. Shot under 40% from the field last year, shot 33% from three-point range last year. For a, like, knockdown, cold shooter, this seems concerning to me. Had an EFG of 4.92. The 6.5 rebounds per game are good. That's about all that he provides. And the other thing is, I've heard that, like, he seriously thinks he's getting, like, a max next year. That he's gunning for, like, a major, major, major contract. A big-time deal. Does none of this, like, I think it's right to be concerned a little bit and be like, let's see how the season goes, Robert Covington. I would be like, well, I would be more like, let's see if he earns it and then we can go after him in free agency. I don't know that he's like, I guess your thing is like, you don't trade Robert Covington if you're the Sixers. And we're like, I don't know if you trade for him if you're the Cavs.
No. I thought he was going to get the extension would be done by now. They still have that cap space. And I thought they were going to renegotiate and extend, and that's still not done, so we'll see.
That's why I hear, and the reason I hear is because, like, there's hang-ups.
Yeah, well, I didn't see the defensive drop-off you were talking about. I thought he was an incredible defender last year. He guarded point guards, he guarded power forwards. The shot was terrible at the beginning of the year, got better later on. I think that the truth is he's probably about an average three-point shooter, not a great one, but he's such a good defender that that's fine to me. I think if he's getting open shots from LeBron, then you're cool with it, and he'll make a lot of them. I was just saying from the perspective is like Covington isn't just a little throw-in. Like you're getting a good player along with Markelle Fultz, and I think you do that in a second. If you're Cleveland, you can get Fultz on a rookie contract and get a player like that. I would do that. I'm just saying if I'm Philly, like I understand how talented Irving is. I wouldn't do it. I would just sit and I'd let the guys that you have develop. I know it's a tough call because Kyrie Irving is one of the biggest names in the league and he's incredibly skilled, but I'd just be patient. I'd just let it grow.
I may have had that wrong on the defense. That's why I remembered, but sometimes I get confused. He was 73rd percentile on synergy and the defense was 6 points better per 100 possessions defensively with Covington on the court. And if you say that you think that his defense didn't slip at all last year, then I get it. Then yeah, I understand.
That's why I value him highly is because of his defense. It's not like I get that the shooting's inconsistent.
Well, it's more of like, all right, he shot 37% in 2015. He shot 35% in 2016. He shot 33% in 2017. Like, that's a concerning trend for a guy who, by the way, is now going to be 27.
Yeah. No, I get it. Like,
But
people thought he was going to be, like, a 40% three-point shooter when he was, like, that's what he was doing in the D-League before he was a player, I think. But, like, that was supposed to be his thing.
But not nearly as concerning as Carmelo Anthony as a player. So, all right, so the Rockets are still widely expected to be the team that snags him. Like, a deal was apparently, like, very close to being done, and then, for whatever reason, has stalled out, as I'm sure New York is weighing offers or trying to get on the Kyrie deal or whatever else. Scott Perry, I think, has a lot to do with it. Like, he came on and is just like, we're not going to do a deal right now until I get my feet under me and figure out what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
There's talk, like we mentioned earlier, of him going to OKC, of Presti being in those talks. Someone hang up the phone. Do not let the Knicks, I don't care who's in charge. No one trades with Sam Presti if you're in that organization. Not with your history. No. Under no circumstances can you trade with Presti. Do not let them do this.
Could you imagine them essentially getting him for like a package centered around Enes Kanter?
Yeah.
So they could just trade like Oladipo, Sabonis, and Kanter and parts or a pick for Paul George and Carmelo. Could you imagine that summer?
And it's really weird to think about, right? With like, if you think of your lineup would be Russ, Paul George, Andre Roberson, Melo, Adams.
And
woof.
I take that.
Because you've got Paul George and Roberson who can essentially cover for any defense. Like, you can hide Melo on defense at any point.
Yep.
Like, you would have two bad defenders on that team in Melo and Westbrook, and you would still be able to hide them effectively because of the kind of talent that you would have.
Yeah. And it's weird because, like, they're bad, but they're at least, like, kind of versatile, right? Like, there's a difference between bad and, like, bad and unable to switch and unable to hide.
Right.
So Westbrook can switch on to twos and threes sometimes. Melo can switch on to twos, threes, and fours, then it's okay. He's not great against any of them. But you know what I mean? Like, that's still a really switchy lineup, even though they have two bad defenders.
I don't know. I'm going to be interested to see how much of the switching stuff happens this summer or this next season. Because, like, all right, that was, like, the rage for 2 years was switchy, switchy, switch, switch, switch. And then even the Warriors were doing some different stuff. Like, essentially now, you have to be able to throw a bunch of different stuff. Like, you've got to, you have to have the switch in the bag, but you can't flat out just be like, we're going to switch everything. It just, you wind up with teams being like, teams are too patient now. They're no longer like, okay, there's a switch and then we're going to just force our way into a mismatch. Teams are smart enough now to be like, all right, they switch. So somebody's mismatched. Let's go find it. Let's either give the small with the big on him the ball, or let's give the big with the small on him the ball. I just think we're going to see a lot more diversity in how teams approach attacking stuff, especially in pick and roll. This year, I think we're going to see a lot more diversity. I think actually we're going to see a lot more blitzes. I think we're going to see a lot more aggressiveness from teams. Because it's getting to the point where there's so... I was talking to Scott about this in Vegas. There's so little contain that is capable now because of the athletes and guards are so good that you almost have to be like, we just got to get the ball out of their hands. Like, anybody else can have the ball. Just don't let these amazing wing players have them and tear you to pieces. Like, get it out of their hands at all costs and deal... Like, you'll take... You know, questionable situations with them, you know, even with being open, that's almost like preferable and sometimes than that guy just being able to rip your team apart. So I think it'll be interesting to see how that goes down. But yeah, I think like Melo and OKC is genuinely interesting. It's that's a lot more interesting to me than Melo and Houston, because I wrote a big thing on how it could work. Like there are promising numbers last year to suggest that maybe Melo could make this work. It just takes a lot of it. It's just going to take a lot of give on Melo's part from a player I've never seen give any.
I do feel like you're inching your way closer to where I am with my Melo optimism about Houston. You're not quite there.
I think a lot of it is just like you're a really smart guy, and I talk to you like several times a week. And if you're this sure that, and it doesn't say that you're super sure, but you're considerably sure that this could work, I have to give it serious thought. Like, you're smarter than I am. I can admit that. Like, that's fine.
Oh, come on. Don't say that.
I'm serious. You're better. That's why you always nail those win projections better than I am. You're always closer on them.
I don't know if I did last year, though.
I haven't done them. I think last year was the one that you did fall off on.
Yeah, last year I went a little crazy.
Yeah, you were feeling yourself and shooting your shot last year.
Yeah.
By the way, my son, I just want to point this out. My son's been downstairs for like the last 15, 20 minutes of this podcast, and he wants to play Arkham Asylum or Arkham City on the Xbox. And he just like Batman, he just wants to play, and he just absolutely will not, like, his steadfast refusal to waive his no trade clause in this issue is remarkable.
Very stubborn. You're raising a little Mellow. No response.
He's drawing something out for me. I'm trying to figure out. Do you want to watch a movie?
Okay.
No. Just say it. What are you looking for?
No.
I said Batman. Batman, no. Okay. All right. So anyway, let me finish this, buddy. So I think, by the way, great parenting right now.
Absolutely.
So I think Melo could work in OKC. I think that would be successful. But I don't find a lot of the scenarios for Melo to be like great decisions. I don't find I don't like him in Cleveland. I don't like him. I still am skeptical about him in Houston, and I don't know where else he would go, you know?
But I think part of like what you just said about blitzing and just getting the ball out of the main guy's hands, I think that's part of why these teams want guys like Melo and want multiple playmakers. It's because like the Cavs went through the whole playoffs, just every series. Like, what did they do? They trapped Paul George to get the ball out of his hand. They did the same thing to Lowry and the DeRozan. They did the same thing to Isaiah Thomas. Like, they couldn't really do that against the Warriors because they have too many guys. They have too many guys that can make plays, that are smart, that are good passers, that can create a little bit. And I think, like, what are you going to do against the Thunder if they have Paul George and Kermit? You're really going to trap Russ? You're really going to force him to get rid of the ball? All right, so you have, like, Melo or Paul George creating in a like 4-on-3 situation. Like, good luck with that. So I think that's a lot of the reason why these teams are trying to stack up is like, you don't want a situation where an opposing team in a playoff situation can just be like, we're going to not let your main guy get comfortable and everybody else is going to have to figure it out. Like, this is part of what the Spurs did to Harden. It wasn't just blitzing all the time. But it was, we're not going to let that guy get comfortable. We're going to tire him out. And what was their option after that? So I think that is a big part of it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. All right, finally.
And that's where Irving is in, like, this weird situation where he wants to go and, like, just be the man. Well, like, you can't just, like, it can't just be you. And that's why his list of destinations is interesting, because it's like, yeah, and then the Knicks would kind of be that, but, like, not with the Spurs. Like, that's the like, world isn't going to revolve around you in San Antonio, the flat world, I guess. like, Kawhi is going to be the guy on offense for the most part. And even Kawhi, he doesn't handle the ball as much as most number one options do, because that's just not how they play.
Yeah. So finally, on Derrick Rose.
Still in no man's land.
Still in no man's land. Approaching a deal with the Cavs, which seems weird that they would... I guess their thing is, if we keep Kyrie, if we don't keep Kyrie, we want Derrick anyway. The word is he's going to start? Which seems like the worst possible idea?
I mean, well, he's going to start, like, in what context? Like, what's the rest of the team going to look like? Here's how I could get behind the Rose to the Cavs thing, and I am a huge pessimist about Derrick Rose. I could get behind it as, like, he comes in with the second unit, and all the rest of the second unit is pretty much just shooters.
Yeah.
So if the floor is space for him, and all he has to do is, like, get to the basket and make plays against backups, like, then that's as good of a role as you're going to find for him today. But if he's starting, like, I don't see how he fits next to LeBron. Like, I just don't – I don't get that. So I would imagine that the plan is to get a better point guard for than Rose in an Irving deal. But I don't understand any scenario where he starts unless they move Irving and don't get a point guard back.
And that would be worse. If they trade Kyrie – and don't get a point guard, and Rose is your starting point guard. And man, I don't know about that. I do not know about that. So like Ryan,
I mean, if Rose somehow recaptured what he had years ago, that would be like the best story in the NBA. It's just like, that's what evidence have we seen of that?
So Ryan Russillo was on the Low Post, and he was talking. They were talking about how they were like, well, this is like a zero. Like, what's the alternative? Like, there's no cost here. It's a cheap 1 year deal. The Cavs can't get anybody else. Here's my thing. The Spurs and the Warriors are who everyone wants to be, right? Like, you look at them and you're like, those teams are objectively the best teams in the league in terms of overall structure. Okay, what do they do? Well, they empower their young guys and give them opportunities, and they grow those guys into being more valuable. And if it becomes that they are worth more than the team is willing to pay for their services, they let them go. Ian Clark. Well, the Cavs aren't doing that. I don't think Kay Felder is horrible. I thought DeAndre Liggins was pretty good for them last year. I think both those guys have potential, but you're never going to know if you're just constantly burying them. And I don't know how much of that is LeBron. I think some of that is LeBron, because LeBron's made comments about how it's like not fair to the young guys to put them in these situations. Well, guess what? The Warriors and Spurs effectively do that. They find ways to get those guys ready and build them up so that they work in those systems. And if you just want to say those guys aren't as good, like, are you really going to sit there and tell me that, you know, Kay Felder and DeAndre Liggins, who's gone now, but, like, those two guys were just objectively way, way worse than the kind of reserves that the Spurs and the Warriors have made work in their systems? Because I don't believe that. I think those guys have potential, and you build them into what you need them to be. Your problem isn't talent, it's you need a better development system.
Yeah, they've struggled. I mean, Tavares might be a guy that could actually help down the line. Like, he is enormous and changes games defensively and can finish just because he's so big and was insanely good in the D League last year. So that might be somebody that they plucked away. And I like Felder's potential too. I just think it's tough. Like, it's when you're trading your first round picks to get better pretty much every year midseason, it's hard to find those guys. Like, you have to be creative. Like, the Warriors went out and they bought a pick so they could get Jordan Bell. The Cavs, because of some salary cap rule, they did not have any money left to do that. It might have been because of money they'd included in a prior trade or something. I don't remember. But I remember going into the draft and some people like, they should buy a pick. And then other people correct them being like, actually, they can't do that. So, like, I'm not going to kill them for this because most of the moves where they've traded the picks have been like, yeah, that's a great move. Like, they should go get Channing Frye. They should go get Kyle Korver. But I do think in the bigger picture, like, is their development program worse than other teams? Yeah, absolutely. Like, they have not groomed guys. That's just not been the priority. And Liggins seemed like a guy maybe that would play real minutes for them in the playoffs that they picked up. But I think they just decided, well, he's just not a good enough shooter, so he's not going to play. I think that was the decision they made. And Felder, they just thought wasn't ready. And I think they should give him more opportunities now. If it was me, I would make him if they get Derrick Rose, then it's different. But like, if it was me, he'd be the backup and Calderon would be the third stringer. And at least at the start of the year. And if you don't trust him in playoff time and you have to play Calderon, then that's fine. But you try at least to develop him.
Yeah, I think you really hit the nail on the head there. All right, that's going to wrap it up with this edition of the CBS Sports Basketball Podcast. We'll be back later this week with more information, probably whenever Carmelo or Kyrie or someone else gets traded, because apparently all the stars are getting traded if you don't live in Golden State. Anyway, I'm Matt Moore. You can find me at Matt Moore CBS or at HP Basketball. That's James Herbert. You can find him at Outside the NBA. Thanks for listening, guys.